Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado during the slow but steady decline of Western civilization. And Bill Jazz is in studio with me right now. And Bill, you know, as we see the influence of President Donald Trump over the last 3 years or so, I was hoping to see something of a fundamental change in our judicial system, not seeing that very much as yet.
Yeah, but you've got to give it time to work its way through the system. I mean, these appointments by Trump have, by and large, been good appointments. They've been more originalists, but you can't expect that you're going to turn the Titanic away from the iceberg in one session, in one term. So they're going to have, this is going to have long-term effects on the judiciary. It may not show immediately.
I come back to my discussion with Senator Ted Cruz a couple of years ago and asked him if there was any potential for the Supreme Court of the United States to reverse Obergefell. His answer was not until 10,000 pastors in America begin to preach God's word. That was what he told me. Touche.
Exactly.
Got it. You know. And so, Bill, I'm in that position still. I guess I don't have a lot of marbles over in that, or eggs in that basket, because I'm still counting on, you know, pastors. I'm looking to the pastors. I'm looking to the churches. I'm looking to the grassroots to bring about something of a revival of a love for God and a love for His law and a discipleship of the nations. I just don't see that happening right now in this nation's history.
Because we, as Christians generally, have become compartmentalized. We think politics is secular, but what we do at church is sacred, when we have to realize that everything for the Christian is worship.
Yeah.
It's Romans 12. I urge you to present your bodies a living sacrifice. Everything we do as Christians is worship to the Creator.
Well, the judicial system in America is DOA still. It's dead on arrival. It still is. The state of Idaho is supposed to be providing sex reassignment surgeries to a man serving a prison term for sexually abusing a child. And that's the latest in the Ninth Circuit. Or as Rush Limbaugh would refer to them as, the Ninth Circus.
Yeah.
The Ninth Circus is saying, hey, you've got to provide sex reassignment surgeries to a man who's convicted of sexually abusing a child. And apparently the case referred to a Supreme Court ruling that concluded a deliberate indifference to serious medical needs of prisoners constitutes cruel and unusual punishment, which means they're saying sex reassignment surgeries must be a serious medical need. See, that's what they're saying. That's the assumption. We got a worldview out operating in the Ninth Circuit.
Oh, yeah, worldviews affect everything. And it wouldn't surprise us that the Ninth Circuit, of all places, would have a very liberal, very secularized worldview.
And I guess my conclusion to the matter is that pastors in San Francisco, pastors in Christian churches throughout California, where the Ninth Circuit resides, need to be preaching God's righteous law. The rejection of God's law eventually results in rewarding the wicked and punishing the righteous, and that's what's going on right now. If one turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. So there's a lot of abominable prayers going on in California, evidently, because people have turned away their ear from hearing the law of God. By the way, biblical law would not allow for the civil magistrate to fund sexual reassignment surgery for a man who is convicted of sexually abusing a child.
No, there'd
would
be punishment. Yeah, there'd be punishment.
Yeah, by biblical law, the convict should have been put to death. But now taxpayers have to be charged, what, $50,000 to get this guy into dresses and heels.
Yeah.
That's just absurd. Is anybody out there saying that's absurd? The governor of Idaho called this decision, quote unquote, extremely disappointing. And, well, maybe he's been reading God's law.
And he's being politically cautious by calling it that when he really should call it evil.
And abominable.
Yeah.
Also, Proverbs 17:15, he who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous are both alike an abomination to the Lord. So the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals of the United States is an abomination to the Lord. And Proverbs 29 also reminds us, when the wicked increase, transgression increases. Meaning, expect there to be a whole lot more sexual abuse of children in the state of Idaho. Expect there to be a great deal more of aberrant sexuality in the state of Idaho. Because, why? Because the judicial system in Idaho and the United States have just increased in their wickedness, and transgression increases. But the righteous will look upon their downfall. And we're going to talk about the downfall of the United States of America next on Generations. It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith. And it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, and I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case, a historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent, the American Pilgrims, and the Battle for King's Mountain? How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org. And we are back on the Generations radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson here, Bill Jack from Worldview Academy also here today. And this from Mises.org, very interesting article from a guy named Jeff Deist. Negative interest rates are the price we pay for the de-civilization. And, wow, did you know there are negative interest rates going on in Europe and Asia, even as we speak?
Okay, Bill? Okay, now wait. Now, please explain to me what a negative interest rate is. It sounds like you're losing money.
Okay, yeah, here's the way it works. Bill, you borrow $1,000 from me.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Next year...
And you charge me interest.
Next year, you pay me back $900.
And you're happy with that.
Yeah. And I give you a big hug. Thanks for borrowing money from me, Bill. That's the way it works.
You're not a very good businessman.
Well, this is astounding. This is astounding. The whole world is going this direction, friends. And that's what's new ground that we've never covered before in the history of the world. Both Europe and Asia are now awash in, get this, $13 trillion worth of negative yielding sovereign and corporate bonds. And Alan Greenspan is suggesting that negative interest rates are soon to arrive in the United States. Despite claims by both Mr. Trump and Fed Chair Jerome Powell concerning the health of the American economy, the Fed's Open Market Committee moved closer to negative territory today with another quarter point cut in the Fed funds rate below even a measly 2%. Negative interest rates are just the latest front in the post-2008 era of extraordinary monetary policy. They represent a Hail Mary pass from central bankers to stimulate more borrowing and more debt, though there is far more global debt today than there was in 2007. Stimulus is the assumed goal of all economic policy, both fiscal and monetary. Demand-side stimulus is the mania bequeathed to us by Keynes, or more accurately, by his followers. It is the absurd idea that an economy prospers by consuming and borrowing, and consuming and borrowing, and consuming and borrowing, and consuming and borrowing, and consuming more and borrowing more, instead of producing and saving. Negative interest rates turn everything we know about economics upside down. Under what scenario, Bill, would someone lend $1,000 to receive $900 in return at some point in the future? Only when the alternative is to receive $800 back instead. Due to the predicted interventions of central banks and governments, only then would locking in a set rate of capital loss make sense. By capital loss, I just mean that. When there is no positive interest rate paid, the principal itself must be consumed. And that's what's going on with, what, $17 trillion in bonds in Europe and Asia. It should be noted that rational purchases of negative yield bonds hope to sell them before maturity. They hope bond prices rise as interest rates drop even lower. They hope to sell their bonds to a greater fool and generate a capital gain.
Is this not just what a Ponzi scheme is?
No. Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Negative interest rates are the price we pay for central banks. The destruction of capital, economic and otherwise, is contrary to every human impulse. Civilization requires accumulation and production. Decivilization happens when too many people in a society is borrowing, spending, and consuming more than they produce. And we are in decivilization right now. So the point of this article is this is what decivilization does in economic policy. It's Keynes on steroids. It's John Maynard Keynes gone mad. He's already mad, but he's gone even more mad. No society in human history previously entertained the idea of negative interest rates. So like central bankers, we are all in uncharted territory now. Friends, we live in an insane world. I think I've mentioned that before on the program. This is insanity. We live in an insane asylum. And our politicians are leading the pack. This economist, I think, has a hard time admitting, though, that society is committing suicide. I don't think he realizes that. I don't think he understands that this is what it looks like when a society has walked over the line of despair. This is what the economic policy looks like. We've looked at what the culture looks like when we walk over the line of despair. We wind up paying $50,000 to help a guy with a sex reassignment surgery who was out abusing kids. Okay, this is insanity. We're completely out of our minds. And, you know, once you've committed insane acts in the judiciary, yeah, I mean, you've got to do it in the Fed, too. You have to do it in your economic policy as well.
You have to do it in your foreign policy and your public policy. And we see that with the way that the United States has funded things like, the United Nations. To our detriment.
Yeah.
Everything is to our detriment. I mean, it makes no sense for us to fund 20% of the cost of the United Nations when all the United Nations does is bash us. Right?
Yeah. 70% of votes
go against us.
Go against us in the UN, and yet we are the biggest funder of the United Nations, bigger than the next three funding nations put together. So, America is out of its mind on multiple levels here. Will sanity return to this country? It's hard to say. Now, it is true that our president is moving more and more towards decentralization and nationalism in his economic policy, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And it's the first time that's happened since, you know, Woodrow Wilson and FDR created the United Nations. So it's interesting that America is moving away from the centralization and maybe trying to protect itself by nationalization, but it's not affecting our economic policy very much.
Well, because the Fed is an independent organization, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And because you still have the influence of those who are part of the old order, you would say, the globalists, as they call them, the internationalists, as they call them. And so they're not putting America's interests first.
55% of the world economy is going negative interest rates, friends. That's the EU. That's America and Japan. That's 55% of the world economy wrapped up in the EU, America, and Japan. 55% of the world economy going negative interest rates. Friends, it's over. It's a house of cards. And the bottom layer of cards have just been blown out. So what's going to happen to the rest of the house of cards, Bill? Given that you've just lost the bottom layer of cards in your house of cards, what's happening with the rest of it, Bill?
Castles in the air. We're building castles in the air.
I'm sort of interested in the response of our listeners to this. Are they going to hide their heads in the sand on this one? That's the question that keeps coming back to me. Friends, this is John Maynard Keynes in steroids. This is John Maynard Keynes encouraging everybody to go into as much debt as possible. That's both personal debt, corporate debt, and national debt. This is John Maynard Keynes on steroids. By the way, I have a whole chapter on John Maynard Keynes in the new edition of Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. You know, he was probably the most notorious homosexual of the 20th century. unleashing existentialism into economics. Somebody asked him, what will happen in the long run if we continue to increase the stimulus into a society in order to increase debt, in order to increase consumer spending? What happens by the year 2024? John Maynard Keynes, you know, I mean, he's busy working on this economic policy almost 100 years ago. So what happens in the year 2024, John Maynard Keynes? And he says, in the long run, we're all dead. Why? Because he's dead and he had no kids. He was a homosexual and he was an existentialist, which means all he cared about was what's happening right now for my benefit in the immediacy. And he could care less if he was spending his great-grandkids into debt because, he didn't have any.
Yeah.
And also he wrote, I am afraid of principle. These are his words. I am afraid of principle. We must not be slaves to principled economics or sound economics. This is John Maynard Keynes. I am afraid of principle. So John Maynard Keynes' basic point was, we need to throw all principle to the wind and be the most flagrant, decadent spenders at every level in society. He pushed hard for birth control in 1925 because he wanted to implode the birth rates as well as kill children, abort the children, as well as implode the economies and destroy economies by way of his fractional banking systems and his massive debt spending schemes. So he pushed hard for birth control, pushed hard for debt spending. He pushed hard to send our grandchildren and great-grandchildren into debt, and he lived a profligate life for his own pleasure and even abused boys sexually. Okay? He would travel to other countries to abuse boys sexually. That's John Maynard Keynes, and he's the inspiration behind four presidents of the United States, back to Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. He's the inspiration behind Japanese economics. Almost all of the major economic forces that are active right now in the world today would say they are Keynesian. They would say it. Just look it up on the internet. You're going to find that Japan, America, the chief economies in the world are Keynesian to the core. And yes, their idea man, the philosopher, was a flaming homosexual who abused boys, perhaps the most profligate and horrible man of the 20th century. No single man will be responsible for destroying an entire world economy like John Maynard Keynes. Read about him in my book, Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. John Maynard Keynes was raised in a Baptist home. His grandfather took up the pastorate at John Bunyan's church in Medford. Do you know that? He was raised with relics from John Bunyan all around him. Probably the most outstanding apostate of the 20th century, a Nephilim of the highest order. And you can read about it in Apostate, The Man Who Destroyed the Christian West, just released, by the way. Well, Bill, what do? Let's talk about answers. Well, here's number one. I think God is preserving his church. I believe he is. I believe he preserves his people. And here's the deal. The church of Jesus Christ will continue, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You know, the highest value in the world is not preserving our nations from collapse. Nations always collapse, unless there's radical repentance at every level. But you don't need to sell your soul to keep the republic from surviving, or to keep the republic surviving. The highest value in the world is what? Fearing God, keeping his commandments, proclaiming the gospel, discipling the nations, building strong families, strong churches, being faithful in small things. So I think we need to come back to this again and again, Bill. And thank God we have islands of culture. This idea that somehow we all need to go glub glub, that's not going to happen. We have islands of freedom. My whole book on the story of freedom talks about how we have, by the grace of God, these islands of freedom. We don't have to play the game. We don't have to play the way that others do it. I talk about islands of culture in my book, The Tattooed Jesus. But what about islands of economy? I've never really talked about that before, Bill, but do you think it's possible we could have islands of economy? You think we have islands of freedom? We don't need to send our kids off to the public schools and give them a destructive epistemology that will ultimately destroy their lives. Can we opt out? Well, that's my question. Can we opt out?
We can only do that if we are salt and light in the system that allows for liberty. Others may choose to send their children to the secular schools, but we have the liberty not to send them, not to sacrifice them on the altar of convenience and evolution.
But it's interesting that the Lord has given us, you know, by decent civil policy, right? By people like HSLD and others involved in the civil magistrate. So we're not saying we don't disinvolve ourselves from the civil magistrate, but we involve ourselves such that we can guarantee some islands of freedom, some bits of freedom for people to make individual choices with their families and churches.
And what my point is that Satan never allows us to fight only on one front. He always attacks from several levels. And so, yes, we protect our families, but we also are salt and light in the culture. And we stand for liberty for all, not liberty for some. So we should not be mistaken for wanting to retreat from culture or withdraw from culture altogether. We do not sacrifice our children to culture, but we fight for liberty while we protect our families.
And what I like to say is we've got to apply a full court press all the time at every level. That is, you know, we're going for every piece we can get of this. But if we can only get an island of freedom here or an island of freedom over there, or we can only sustain something of a sane economic policy over here or a sane economic policy over there, let's go for it.
It's the Nehemiah principle. You know, you build where you can, you battle where you must.
There you go. Yeah. All right, friends. Well, we're going to wrap up this edition of the program. Stay out of the big money. Diversify your family economy. Don't trust the money systems. Don't trust big banking. Just don't trust it. Trust in God. You're going to trust in God. Ironically, your money continues to encourage you to that. You notice that, Bill? Have you ever pulled out a bill?
In God,
you know,
in the
Federal Reserve System, we trust.
No.
In the United States federal government, we trust.
No.
And all of its $21 trillion of national debt, we trust him. No.
So
something like in God we trust.
Yeah.
Okay. Friends, just a last encouragement. Don't trust in big governments. Don't trust big banking. Trust in God. Get out of debt. By the way, I've only said that 400 times over 14 years. Get out of debt. Most importantly, don't ever, ever, ever depend on the state for welfare or Social Security. Just don't do it. We must develop our private charity. We must open up our homes for the elderly in our churches. We must move the diaconate from this, a can drive every Thanksgiving to what? You know, historically, Bill, it was 25% of the church income went to widows. Do you know that? Historically.
Wow.
And you look at your average church budget of, you know, like $500,000 or whatever it is for, you know, let's a church of, say, 300. Be $500,000. Bill, that'd be like $175,000 to the widows in the church.
Hmm.
How often does that happen? Not very often. Friends,
not too often.
I encourage you to move the diaconate from 2% of the giving to 25% of the giving. And get involved in a church that is on board that vision, returning to a biblical pattern of caring for the elderly and the widows in the church. And take care of your elderly parents and grandparents. You say, why in the world are we coming back to this? Because we need to be faithful in small things. Hey, the world passes away with its lusts. But he who does the will of the Father abides forever. All right, so this is something of a voice crying in the wilderness, I realize. You know why, Bill? Because people have this impression that everything's just fine. We're only in $21 trillion in debt, and now we're pushing negative interest rates for 55% of the world economy, but it's all wonderful. It's all wonderful. We still have enough money to pay for our psychotropic drugs.
There you go.
I'm not feeling this, baby. I'm not feeling this.
Personal peace and prosperity.
All right. Well, friends, we need Christians to return to a biblical way of thinking about everything, including economics. And what does the Word of God say about economics? Actually, not a whole lot, but something. Basically, what it says is families and churches engage in private charity and stay out of debt. That's pretty much it. And don't worship money. Trust in God. That wraps up this edition of the Generations Radio Broadcast. I encourage you to our little book, The Story of Freedom, which gives you something of a worldview perspective of what it is to live free. What is the will of God concerning this matter of freedom? To be free from debt. To be free from the unnecessary servitude of men. I deal with that in my book, The Story of Freedom, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.